I'm Andrew.
I'm Scott.
And I'm Steve.
And you're listening to Weekly Geek Speak. Hello, welcome to Weekly Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hello.
We are a weekly geek podcast bringing you various discussions,
yes,
comments, and opinions on a variety of geeky subjects. And later in the show, Lucy will be talking to Rob Nevitt, who is the curator of the Celluloid Screams Film Festival, which will be in Sheffield. In a few weeks' time, we will be covering the festival at the end of the month, but he will be talking about what's coming up in the festival, some of his highlights, and what to look out for. You can find us on Twitter if you like and interact with us, get involved, talk to us, respond to any of the questions we may come up with during this show at Weekly Geek Speak. And also on Facebook, facebook.com/weeklygeekspeak. We're also on Instagram, and you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher and Podcastland, and we are also on YouTube too. The home, the hub, the mothership, if you like, of all this is weeklygeekspeak.com. That's our website, that's where we live.
And that, I think that's about everything.
I think that's about everything. We are also at work hand in hand with Belts, Buckles and Tees, and there'll be a Belts, Buckles and Tees competition flapping around on the internet at the moment. So have a look, have a retweet, have a like, whatever we decided to do, it'll be there. But more news, if you do follow us on Weekly Geek Speak, we keep you updated on there. But today, we are kicking off this podcast with Recommend Eagermend.
What week is this?
This week is the week of the magic Recommend Eagermends. Okay. Recommend Eagermend, what's that, Scott?
Recommend Eagermend is our bi-weekly catch-up game where we all put the best film we've watched in the interim forward and we vote and talk about it, see what collectively it'd be the best one to recommend this podcast, and we do the same for the inverse, good ones, aka the bad ones, which we recommend, which is a term we've made up. Is someone buzzing?
Someone's buzzing.
In my time.
That's you.
You're buzzing.
Mine's the other side of the room, near the paint cans.
I don't even know where mine is. Mine's in my pocket.
That's you.
You've just got like an ultra vibration setting on your phone.
Maybe.
Just to let you know, any of our regular listeners might be going, what's going on? As we explained last week, we're swippy swapping. So every other week.
Swiping,
so you've gone like 3 weeks now without hearing us doing a recommend, decommend.
Bloody hell.
You must be...
Withdrawals.
Chomping at the bit.
And it's me kicking off with recommend. The best film I've watched. I've only watched 8 films, which is quite low for me. And I think I'm going to put forward a film starring Bill Murray.
Heard of him.
I know, nowadays he just seems to do cameos, poke his nose into things, this, that and the other. But it was really good to see him in St. Vincent, which came out very recently.
It's on my planner.
It is a really fun, nice film about a grumpy old man who lives in a house. He's on his own. And when you first meet him, he's a bit of a twat, really. Bill Murraying about, so he's really funny and charismatic. He basically does feel very much like Bill Murray.
I want that to be a verse. So bad,
Bill Murraying.
What are you doing?
Then the family move in. A mother and a son just got divorced. The mother is played by Melissa McCarthy, who is fantastic in this film. Exactly like Kristen Wiig. You know when Kristen Wiig does the my Saturday Night Live persona. This is what I do. I feel that Melissa McCarthy has been pushed into this box as well of being this kind of David Brent-esque woman that they've asked her to be. She's actually great as playing a straight role. It works. She plays kind of a mother who is very angry at her partner who's obviously cheated or something. So she's actually a bit bitter towards him. And this poor little kid's stuck in the middle. And this poor little kid has to be babysit by Bill Murray one day. And then this kind of relationship grows between the boy and the child, the old guy and the kid, and it's just bringing the fun into this grumpy old man's life. And then you find out a lot more about Bill Murray's character, and he's not just a grumpy old man. And it's really good. There's great funny characters in it. It's a great indie kind of drama, and It's one that I've kind of seen and gone, oh, I'll watch it someday. But then someone really recommended it to me, and we watched it, and it was fantastic. Really good film. Cool. I don't want to say much more because I don't want to give anything away. It's just a lovely, heartwarming story, and Bill Murray, I could watch him for hours, to be honest. Oh, and he's not going over the top. You know, sometimes in his cameos he's a bit over the top and he's a bit wacky. He's actually bang on in this, and this is the Bill Murray we love, you know. This is like he is in Ghostbusters, that kind of sardonic, sarcastic. It could almost be an aged Venkman who's now got no friends and living in a house and just not really caring about anything. But yeah, I cannot sing its praises anymore.
Pause. Sounds good.
So yeah, that's mine, St. Vincent. I'm going to move over to the bearded one. Happy sounds birthday good. For the other week. Actually, we'll do that on the other podcast.
Oh, all right.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
I've forgotten my own rules.
Yeah.
Oh.
Easily edited.
Edit. Thanks for eliminating that, editor.
Please take this part out.
That's what I said to my dad, and he didn't.
Oh.
Oh, that bit's in. Out of context now.
Make of that what you will. Steve, what did you watch? What are you recommending today?
Well, it's an interesting one because I want to mention it. I'm not going to bring it as a recommend because there's no point. Because I've given it its time. But I saw Goonies in the cinema, finally.
Yeah. Goonies in the cinema.
That's two of my top three films I've seen in the cinema now. And I have to say, it was an incredible experience seeing it. It looked great. It's brilliant. But I think, I don't know, Lost Boys, for me, seemed better. I prefered seeing Lost Boys in the cinema. It was just really nice because there was only five of us in the screen.
It feels,
and it was lovely. We had it all to ourselves. It was like our own personal showing of Goonies. It was great.
Quite cool. I think what made really Lost nice. Boys work really well in the cinema, and it seems odd comparing Joel Schumacher to Dario Argento, but it was that choice of lighting and you were bathed in those lights, and that's just something you never get with your telly unless you have all the lights off when you're watching a film, is what lighting and colour can bring to it.
And
to
the soundtrack was really sort of... Mm. haunting. It's sort of,
Whereas you're underwhelmed by Goonies because it's really overrated.
Well, Goonies, actually, it's really weird. It was great to see in the cinema, but really, you don't realise till you see it blown up and in sort of good quality. What a dark, like, not dark as in like dark film, how dark it is. You can barely see. Helps. Some of the shots you can barely see. It's very sort of not very well lit, and it was very sort of...
Well made.
It feels quite low budget in places because you can't see, the lighting's not very good, and it's
low quality.
But it's still great. So yeah, I just wanted to mention that. And I saw Princess Bride at a screening as well, not at a cinema.
Oh, cool.
And that was ace.
Yeah, I love Princess Bride.
So I just wanted to throw those out because I've seen. But yeah, the one I'm going to bring as a recommend is Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Seen it?
One of those. Okay, I'm watching it rather than twatting about on Netflix like you do, and it was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it. The streets of LA look beautiful at night. It's really well filmed. It's really nice, and seeing Jake Gyllenhaal sort of do something different as well. It's kind of starts off the opening bit. It's not spoiled. The opening bit is sort of like a bit of a criminal. He's sort of, where's this going? And then he sees this news van filming this horrific accident and goes, wait a minute, how'd you get into that? And the story goes from there, really. But yeah, just nice to see him playing a different sort of character in it, and it's quite a few sort of questioning your morals and morality and what would you do in that situation? I mean, he's trying to earn money and get a living, and then there's the TV station going, can we show this? And then people go, yeah, we're going to air that because this is great, this will get people talking. And
an interesting point actually was brought on a very similar subject, was brought up on the Anywhere But Here podcast, the ABH pod, check it out, it's very good. But when the plane, a few weeks ago now, when that show plane crashed into the road, to one of the motorways, and people were filming it and things, and that film actually immediately made me think of a Nightcrawler, and that has very similarities. Where does the line draw, you know? And it did, I mean, Nightcrawler, it really is crossed.
Definitely.
But yeah, I think it's a fascinating, the media, modern society, how we see this kind of things, how quickly things are blown over, but how quickly things come about. Yeah. I mean, furore on the internet the other week about David Cameron and a pig's head seems to blow over in a couple of days.
And it's like, wait a minute, what?
Whereas back in the day, and when I was a kid, that kind of stuff would be in the papers for weeks.
Who's not stuck the dick in a pig's head?
Who hasn't? Let's be honest.
I think that's the thing.
But if someone doesn't sing the national anthem, I'm going to be furious.
A wonky tie? Disgusting.
But get your cock in that pig.
That is something we can all get behind.
Oh, yes. Or in front of.
He didn't say whether he put it in the mouth or in the gullet hole.
Oh, yeah.
My favourite comment on Facebook about it was like, typical lefties. Oh, calling him a pig fucker. He only put it in its mouth. I'm like, oh, what a great defence.
Yeah. Just
but
the
tip. Not proven. We'll
fucking left wing media focusing on the
alleged pig fucker.
Alleged, yeah.
Definite.
But how how bizarre that Black Mirror a couple of years back just pigs and Prime Minister.
No,
wait a minute.
No, you just have to look at David Cameron to know. He probably fucked a pig.
True.
Anyway, not
society.
Hey!
Close your eyes. Close your eyes and think it's England.
So yeah, Nightcrawler was my... and it's an 8 out of 10. It was brilliant. Loved it.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Good stuff indeed.
Your turn, Mr. Scott.
Oh, very impressed. Yes.
Why are you some kind
I'm
of
stalling for time.
You've got it written on a bit of paper.
Scott, what are you recommending?
But the reason it's hard, right?
Is it?
Is it because all we're talking about fucking pigs?
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. Scott, well, I enjoy a bit of ham. I watched Star Wars.
Oh,
which one?
Bit obvious, isn't it?
All right.
A New Hope, episode 4.
All right.
And then I watch Empire, which is my second favourite film of all time.
Decommended the other week.
And then I've watched Rocky Horror Picture Show. Now, these are some of my favourite films, and I don't know if I've ever recommended them or mentioned them. And they're a bit obvious on the nose.
I don't even mentioned Rocky Horror as a top.
I feel like I have.
Interesting one.
You've briefly brought Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Rocky Horror Picture
Show. Yeah, I have. Have you ever brought Star Wars?
I think in
you brought Empire.
Empire's brought, you've so I think you've got to go A New Hope.
I've got to go A New Hope, Star Wars, A New Hope.
Why is this good?
Why is this good? It built a modern day mythology and it resurrected the sci-fi genre. Provided us a host of iconic moments and characters in a beautiful self-contained film with enough inbuilt mythology and freedom to create an entire franchise to captivate millions and sell billions and create Jar Jar.
You had me. I was on the
We know Star. The only problem is with this section sometimes. If you watch like Citizen Kane, you feel a bit like, oh, I'm that guy who's recommending Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
And
they also,
do you know what I mean, like,
does it need recommending?
Yeah, it's one of the, oh, I'm the guy who watched Raiders of the Lost Ark and I'm telling you it's good. Mm. You know it's good. Mm. You're listening to us, like, but it's what I watch, so fuck off.
There's his pitch. I watch Star Wars, fuck off. I've got Nightcrawler and Star Wars and New Hope. Nightcrawler I thought was very good. I think Jake Gyllenhaal is actually quite an underrated actor. I think he's very good in a lot of the things he does. I enjoyed this film a lot. It had me on the edge of my seat. That whole last sequence is great. Actually, a great action sequence in the middle of what is essentially a drama for the most part. Some of the best, I mean, you bang on about Fast and the Furious. That car chase scene one of the better ones I've seen in recent years.
It's incredible.
Really nicely filmed and things. And very tense
film. I forget who directed it, but it did look gorgeous. Mm. It was nice.
There's a show called Hollywood's Best Film Directors.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's just like a sit-down interview with various Hollywood directors. And each director obviously talks really pretentiously about films. And they had the guy who did The Fast and the Furious on it. And he also did...
James Wan?
I forget his name now.
Okay.
But he also did The Mummy, the fourth Mummy film.
Is it someone Summers, isn't it?
Someone.
Okay.
And he was just going on about, you can watch all the John Ford films and David Lean films you want, but your own experiences will inform your art. And I was just sat there going, you made Vin Diesel drive a car. And I got really angry.
Made a CGI mummy.
I mean, I did film studies. I appreciate the medium and he's an artiste fan. Mm. Oh, I just sat there going, you made the fucking shittest mummy film. The franchise renowned for being okay on its best day. Mm. In 1996. I don't know. It got me angry.
But Nightcrawler.
I prefer nothing. Sorry.
It's a great film. I like the tone. I like the style. Mm. I like the content. I like. Oh, there's a lot going for that film. Definitely. I like the moral questions it throws up and just how low this guy will go. You know, depths.
Yeah,
that you wouldn't quite believe. But you know, Star Wars: New Hope. I can't really argue a point against that. But at the same time, I'd rather recommend Nightcrawler in today. On purely, but for it's a geek podcast. Well, what a predicament!
I know.
It doesn't really matter at the end of the day.
No, not even really.
But it does.
It does matter.
What are the stats? No.
I think. Well, Star Wars is great, and everyone should be watching this in the next few months. So I'm going to have a Star Wars binge soon.
Yeah, definitely.
Prequels, yeah.
I have to see the highs and lows.
How do you watch it now? Do you watch the 4, 5, 6 and 1, 2, 3, or do you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6?
I would probably go 1, 2, 3 because I want to get them out of the way.
Yeah.
And then 4, 5, 6 because then I remember why I love them.
That's what I'm going to do because I've never seen 2 and 3, so I feel like I've got to bite the bullet and do 1, 2, 3.
Can I be there when you watch 2 and 3? Yeah.
It's one of these things that we throw out there, but genuinely I'd like to sit down with you and just watch back to back them on a day.
Yeah,
I know we said that about the Avengers one a while ago, but I think that'd be great.
It's more than anything, I want, because it's been so long since I've had an immediate reaction to the prequels. It might be juicy
because I've never seen it.
Let's hook
it.
I want to.
And also, I think because we watched the old ones, we should watch the 97 ones just to see how they are now. See if you're still offended by them.
They're my ones.
Which I honestly,
because I have a go about his Blu-ray changes, but then I watched the 97 one.
Yeah,
but so at the same time,
like to stand on.
It's kind of it's interesting.
In reflection to everything else, I don't think the alterations he's made are that offensive. Not the Blu-ray ones, replacing people, but just creating some stuff in the background and bringing a whole new generation into Star Wars. I think still remember the 97 ones fondly because obviously I came in on them and it kept it alive. Star Wars would be something we might not have ever got prequels and things, and maybe you could say, well, maybe it would be better without the prequels, but then we wouldn't be having this
one. I don't mind someone touching up a bit of the corner of a painting. It's when you change the face.
Yeah, it's like the Mona Lisa suddenly having a mustache
and
a hat.
It's just when you put Aidan Christensen in, it's a lie. Isn't it?
Oh, there's room. That's spoiler, but yeah, news. He's going to be in the 8th one as Darth Vader. Or the 9th one. Hayden Christensen's going to be in.
He's not in anyone as Darth Vader.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
He's going to be in it. He's going to be in it again. And I went, what on earth? Did they not learn their lesson? They've cast Hayden Christensen
Continuity.
Again. No.
Well, I don't really know where to go with this one, but if purely on the word recommend, I don't think Star Wars needs recommending. But I do think Nightcrawler. Some people may not have seen it. And I think you should, so I'm going Nightcrawler.
Okay.
Which feels a bit sacrilegious and I feel a bit dirty now. Thanks, Scott.
Someone else can bring it.
Steve!
Hi.
St. Vincent or Star Wars?
Yeah, I think you've pretty much echoed what I was screaming as soon as Scott started recommending Star Wars. I'm like, shit, I'm going to have to pick Star Wars or St. Vincent. I think with the Star Wars resurgence and the new one coming, I think pretty much if people haven't seen it, they'll be on board and everyone and their granny will be watching the 6 films in the next.
Well, the
few
reason
months.
I was watching them actually, because I was going to save it to obviously closer to Force Awakens, is because I was showing someone who's never watched Star Wars.
Oh, wow, okay.
And they're in. It's amazing watching Star Wars with someone who's not watched it.
Yeah.
Just the little comments like, I thought she liked Luke. And then you sit there with your little secret going, your mind's going to be blown.
Oh, wow, okay. So even that level of.
Just you wait, you're going to be sick to your stomach.
So again, I'm in the same predicament as Andrew. It's tough. Do we need to throw out a recommend for a film that is so out there and all over the place at the minute that people will be watching and going to because this new one's coming out? Or do we throw out Bill Murray being in an indie film being cool?
I think we all approach this section in different ways. I don't see it as what am I going to recommend to people. I just take it as what's the best thing I've watched.
Yeah.
But it's called recommend, decommend.
Well, I go on what the best thing I've watched, the same, regardless of whether it's going to be
I think you can play it both ways, though. On the day, because I might pick something that's brilliant and I watch for ages. But at the same time, St. Vincent, I think, is a film that people need to watch.
Yeah,
because it's hidden away on Netflix and things, and it hasn't had the pomp it's deserved by its own distributor, in my mind.
But, yeah, that's just why I never go, oh, I saw this.
Yeah, no, I'm the same. Cause,
well, I watched Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's Star Wars.
I'm going to go Star Wars. I can't not. Because, I mean, Star Wars started it. Without Star Wars, we wouldn't have got Empire. Empire is the greatest Star Wars film. And now we've got the new ones. And part of my childhood. And I just, yeah, I'm going to go Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see where this one goes.
So that leaves you, Scott, so either throwing it to an audience vote or picking Nightcrawler. It is St. Vincent or Nightcrawler.
St. Vincent is well on my want-to-watch list. It's even on my planner, which I feel is becoming a catchphrase of mine. It's on my list on Netflix.
It's
on my
massive list.
Honestly, if you go on my Sky planner, it's like, oh, you've got 11% left, and it's all just films. I just can't be arsed with.
But you're never in the mood for them. You make this list, and you scroll through the list and go,
am I going to watch Transformers Age of Extinction today? Of course I'm not, because it's Transformers Age of Extinction. Yeah. You scroll down, and then once every 3 days, as almost like a routine, I'll hover over Wolf of Wall Street and go, don't have time, that looks a bit long. Every 3 days.
You will love that film.
I know. I'm the same, though. I can't. It's 3 and a bit hours, and I'm like, no.
I love Scorsese. I'm a huge Scorsese fan. Can't commit this time.
Just see Goodfellas, Casino, Wolf of Wall Street. Yeah. They're all like, they're like, that's the trilogy for me now. Because they all feel like they're all self-narrated, and it's just brilliant. It's just so good.
I just need
you guys are mental.
I just need to power
watch his Good Burger, for God's sake.
I did watch Good Burger. I don't know. It's a complete frame of mind for me. I'm just in a phase of my life at the minute. I'm not watching as much. I'll get back into it.
I know what you mean.
So I really want to see St. Vincent because I love Bill Murray and everything I've heard ticks the boxes alike. And as sure as you can be whilst knowing nothing. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a fun time. I enjoy it. But I watched Nightcrawler at the cinema, and I really enjoyed it.
You recommended it as well.
I recommended it, I think, yeah.
I thought it was very disturbing. I thought it was a brilliant performance from the very slender and gaunt Jake.
Yeah.
And just seeing the lengths this guy goes through, how he manipulates things, how cold he can be, how that reflects today in the media and all that. It was just very clever and made you uneasy. And not in the sort of crass blood guts way, just in the how cold a human being can be.
Pure sociopath. Like,
yeah, it basically is a sociopath whilst not doing anything overly sociopathic.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what surrounds us and what people do. They exploit the way people exploit things.
I think that's one of the main things. You don't see him as such an abhorrent character because you see that that's what the wider media is like. Yeah. So you're not even like... You're actually more going, God, the media's disgusting. You're not going, he's disgusting as much. You're going, well, everyone's going along with him.
Yeah.
There's no ramifications for this guy.
And it's like, at what point do we, like, humanity, like, stop it? It's gone too far. But,
definitely.
So it's a fascinating film. It's really good. I recommend it fully.
So Nightcrawler is the winner. Steve's the
one. Worst X-Men Origins film, though.
Yeah,
don't even tell him.
Even go blue.
No,
it's decommend time. The worst films that we watched, and I've got a right tough job here because I've watched 8 good films.
Okay,
so I'm going to have to go to a 6 out of 10.
No.
Now I could pick Beavis and Butthead Do America, but I didn't really watch it.
I am Colin Hollier,
but I didn't even watch it properly because I was too busy poking Steve and things.
Yeah, we were.
Excuse me.
What?
He was being the pig's head, and I was being camera.
His birthday.
It was special. It was a one-off.
So I mentioned it briefly a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Big Trouble in Little China. It's got to be Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat!
I won't really go on too much because I did mention it, my issues with it briefly the other week. But the special effects have dated awfully.
Right.
And Sub-Zero and Scorpion are done away with too quickly. And there's too much focus on Johnny Cage. However, it's awesome. I've got to find the bad points in it. But it's a great film. It really has the charm. It's amazing that a film like this can be made. Same with Street Fighter. It's so weird and cheesy, and it only could have been made in the 90s, couldn't it?
The most wonderful time.
So actually, I enjoyed watching it. I really enjoyed watching it, but it was almost unforgivably badly made, for even for its time. And that's the only bit that I still enjoyed it. Yeah. But the problem is, everything's good on this list, so it's got to be more.
Funnily enough, I was a pig's hair next to David Cameron away from watching Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
I'm desperate to watch it.
So that could have been an interesting... You've never seen
it? No, I've watched it.
Oh, but I've not seen it.
If it's on, we should watch it tomorrow.
Oh, that's another one. I've not seen it. We're putting a lot on our watch list together.
We are.
I want you to all watch
Annihilation's great. I think Annihilation's better, even though it's worse. I don't
know. It's like, it's definitely worse, but I can see why people prefer it.
Yeah. Steve, what is your decommend?
So, I've got a definite decommend, and then I was having a conversation with Jen, and she said, I'm sure that's been ultimately decommended. So, my decommend was going to be the first film I watched after recording, which was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the Michael Bay edition.
Yeah, I believe it.
I think it has,
It wasn't an ultimate.
Has it been
I decommended it, and then you brought it again.
Did it?
But then I had to disqualify it because you decommended it. So it has been decommended, basically.
It's been
now been decommended three times.
So it's gone in the well.
It's
Shit.
The
right.
first film down the well. To be brought as a decommend by all three people.
Yeah. We went away, and the night after recording, we sat down to watch it. Like that. Well, there's my decommend story.
You,
if I don't watch anything
what
else.
What were you offended by, other than everything?
I don't know. I think. April O'Neil, just Megan Fox. Yeah. What the fuck? Yeah. Just really? No. Their faces, just the stupidity of it.
Didn't you see what I meant, though? It kind of had the... What was annoying is it had the essence, the kernel of...
Yeah, the opening bit, the animated bit, was brilliant. And I was like, oh, great. This actually looks all right. What are people on about? And then the film started, and it was like, okay.
But every so often, because you're just a little flash of character moment, you go... Oh, damn.
There's a lot so good.
That they do. That they say the dialogue's fine between them, not outside of that. Will Arnett being a cunt. A lot of the dialogue between the Ninja Turtles is great. Mm. The camaraderie. It's just they look awful and the story's stupid and they've destroyed Shredder and they...
Shredder
is just...
Shredder was ridiculous. It was like, Iron Shredder,
Iron Shredder.
Fuck. And it was
that was my Krang
Transformer Shredder.
I can't even go so far as to say, oh god, it was fucking terrible. It was a 5 because, like you say, there was nods to things like, I could have been so good, and it almost makes me want to go and watch the first Transformers film to see the glimmers of hope that could have been in that, because I'm like, well, maybe I will. But there's plenty of other... I mean, good burgers out there. I've not seen that either.
The first Transformers film is all right.
I
think it's a 6 bordering 7.
Okay.
It's just it continued and got more racist and annoying and stupider as it went on. Right, and you watch the first one and you don't think that's too possible. but the first one's kind of fun for what it was.
It is. There's a bit too much of Shia LaBeouf running around. But Megan Fox. But again, like if you get rid of the human characters, like in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, get rid of the human characters and you just watch the Transformers, that's pretty good.
Some nice scenes.
It's just from then on.
You'd like the first one, I think.
Okay.
What are you defending?
So I can't decommend that, and I've mentioned the other three films. I've watched both Despicable Me movies.
Good.
I enjoyed them. They're great.
I really like the first.
And the second one, I think the second one's a lot stronger than the first one.
No, maybe.
I don't know. I just find it a bit more...
It's got a bit more going for it.
Oh, it's going to be tough. And Cars. Oh, that's my list.
Can I look?
Go on. Cars was the other one I watched, which I'd never seen out of principle because it was just a bloody toy
selling.
You're
okay with SpongeBob SquarePants the movie?
Yeah. I like it. It's very, very silly. And the David Hasselhoff bit just has me every time I watch it. It's great. It's just so silly.
So where are we going? We've got to push you now.
It's tough. I'm going to go for Cars.
Cars, okay.
Cars.
I finally watched it. I've put it off because, like I say, I thought it was just a merchandising thing and it wasn't their usual sort of story style. It was a lot better than I thought. There were some funny moments. The characters are quite good. They are quite funny. Personalities sort of do fit the Cars quite well. But again, it was just there. Let's throw it out to children and make a million sequels and then make planes and then make boats and helicopters and all that kind of stuff just to sell toys to kids.
Planes wasn't Pixar.
It
was Disney kind of.
Right.
Jumping on the back.
Yeah,
I know Disney owned. I know it's complicated, it's not a Pixar film.
It's Disney rather than Disney Pixar. So it was all right. It was amusing, but it was still just a let's sell toys to kids, which is fine. But nothing offensive. Just yeah.
Okay, Scott.
Have I decommended? I feel like this is fucking Groundhog podcast. Have I decommended Waterboy before?
Mama says.
Because I feel like I have.
Hey, Waterboy!
I feel like I probably have. I feel like I've been here. No, have I not? No, have I decommended Good Burger before?
Yeah.
Can we have? We need a database. We say this. We need it. We need an online spreadsheet.
I just want to write it in.
Type it in and go. I've seen it.
No. I actually put one together because I'm running out of space in the old book and I'm forgetting myself. So I'll send you all a spreadsheet.
Cool.
I watched The Waterboy, and I know we can be quite scathing about Sandler because we all know his crimes against humanity after the year 2000 somewhere. But you know, his early 90s stuff and stuff, I'm kind of fond of.
Yeah.
I like The Wedding Singer, Big Daddy's Girl, Happy Gilmore's Girl. And this kind of falls in there. So I'm not that vitriolic against it. It's just not that good either. Okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just what it is. And it was that or About Time, the Richard Curtis time travel film, which I have no real opinion of, other than the fact very little happens.
And Richard Curtis did it.
And the lead seems to be one of the Weasleys acting like Hugh Grant.
Right.
Which is, I could not stop watching the Weasley be Hugh Grant. It was weird.
Okay.
It was
weird. What the fuck?
It was like someone asking like Hugh Jackman to be Gordon Ramsay. Do you know when you're like, you shouldn't be this. You're not this. do you like when you see like what a Freaky shit? Friday thing and then they've got their voice?
And you're like, what?
And then you're like, you shouldn't have their voice. They've swapped body. It was like that. So I guess it's Waterboy.
So it's just not very...
It's all right. It has a moment. I mean, it's a six. It's just the worst thing I've watched. I mean.
Ooh, okay. So they're all kind of fivesy sixies kind of thing this week. So I get to choose for Cars and Waterboy. Waterboy is in a time of Sandler which I didn't mind. And
yeah, so.
I don't hate Waterboy at all. I think it's very silly. I think it's honestly silly as well. It's not trying to be anything else. But he is trying to make something funny as opposed to resting on his laurels and making Jack and Jill, which is just an embarrassment. Waterboy is just silly.
Mm.
It felt right at the time. It kind of felt like a spoof near enough to Forrest Gump that it could work as well in that kind of spent sense. It's not nothing I can really comment on other than it's a passable Sandler movie.
Mm.
Cars, I think I'm going to decommend that because... Even though it's probably better and I might enjoy it overall, it just seems the only time Pixar have just sold out. It seems like Pixar's cash cow, and they don't need to go to cash cow because they make beautiful films with cutesy, sellable characters, which is also appeals to the wider audience and the family as a whole, whereas I just see Cars as toys. Now, I can't speak because I haven't seen it, so maybe I am judging it, but that's how it comes across.
It comes across like that to me, and now I've seen it. It is actually a really nice story, and it's quite sweet, and there's some touching moments, but I still can't see past the fact that, like you say, they sold out, and there's just fucking Cars stuff everywhere. They don't need that. And the second one, by all accounts, is just, there's no story, there's no plot. They went, hey, let's make another one to sell more toys, and apparently that one is terrible.
Jeremy Clarkson voiced a car in one of them. So.
Did he?
I think it was the truck in the second one.
Oh, okay, there you go then.
So yeah, it doesn't... Because it's hard choice, it's just Cars because of my preconceptions.
Yeah.
So that means, Steve, you go first, and you have Mortal Kombat and Waterboy.
Mortal Kombat, I remember seeing because I loved the game. I was around in the days when it first came out and was amazed at the graphics because it was like,
When you were around in the days Alan Turing first came out.
Yeah, that's the one. So seeing the upgrade from that to Mortal Kombat's graphics of real people, what the shit? There's colours and stuff.
The old jokes never get old. Unfortunately, Steve does. Oh,
shit!
Third unit.
So yeah, but Waterboy again. It's the time that Adam Sandler wasn't that offensive. He was doing his stuff. It was funny. It was of its time, and it's still watchable. It holds up as one of Sandler's sort of alright pieces. So it's tough. It's gonna have to be Mortal Kombat because I remember watching it at the
time.
I've
only just realised I'm literally staring at Andrew's Star Wars trilogy sitting above Waterboy, and they're literally I've recommended and decommended. That's freaky.
That's like something that Darren Brown would pull a cloth off at the end of his show.
It looks like I've just glanced over there and guessed.
And we've got the wedding singer as well. Whoa.
Yeah. That's weird. And I've been staring at that for ages, but never clocked that, like, I was talking about this too.
Kaiser, seriously. So it's going to be Mortal Kombat, because I remember seeing it at the time and thinking it was awful, but I liked the soundtrack, and I remember not liking the film. So I'd like to see it now in retrospect and watch it again, but it's going to be that, because I didn't like it at the time, and thought, wow, this is terrible.
Adam Sandler's winning today.
So, unfortunately, yeah, it's going to be Mortal Kombat.
Scott, you decide Mortal Kombat or Cars?
I don't want to live in a world where getting rid of Mortal Kombat. I don't want to live in that world.
No.
I don't. I love that film.
You have the control of which world you do.
When I rented that film, like, ridiculously early, like, when I was 12 or something. Because it's a film based on a video game, who gives a shit, but... You know,
they must be good.
Yeah, they must be good.
They're always going to be good.
Genre's up and coming.
And, you know, I've got a huge stop. Any 90s comic book video game film, I don't care how shit they are, I'm watching them. Super Mario Brothers, Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat.
I didn't watch Street Fighter based off the back of Mortal Kombat being rubbish.
Oh, I watched Street Fighter, Steve. Kylie Minogue's in it.
Okay.
Street Fighter is weird.
Is it?
Because half the characters they do... by the book, and half the characters they kind of remake up. What's going on there?
Street Fighter is at the very least hilarious.
Right.
You will be amused.
Okay.
It's chilly electromagnetic. There's a bit where he explains how he can fly, and he just says some pseudoscience bit, and it really annoys me.
Okay.
It really amuses me. It's me, superconductive electromagnetism! That's the bit. I remembered it. And it makes me laugh every time. But Street Fighter's awesome. I don't. It could date forever. It won't date in my heart. Everyone needs to watch it for Goro and all the characters. Whereas Cars is my least favourite. No, well, that's not true. Cars 2 is my least favourite Pixar movie because it's not very good. And it feels cynical. And it's based on the first one, which is just a merchandise hit. It's an okay film.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have a pop at it just because it happens to sell.
No, same. I just...
But...
Yeah,
it for Pixar, it's a bit subpar, and it's okay at best. Mm. And then what for that to get a sequel out of all the pantheon before anything else, it was just a bit like, oh, come on, because that Pixar is the studio. Like, you can argue Marvel and all this, but no one's more consistent than Pixar. And it's just a little blot in the copybook. I don't like. You took those two out. I can forgive Monsters University and stuff. Took those two out. They're like almost perfect studio, aren't they?
Yeah.
So
there we are.
Cars.
Yeah. Cars. Your recommend this week is Nightcrawler and your decommend is Cars.
Hello everyone, this is Lucy. I'm reporting for Weekly Geek Speak, and I'm here with Rob Nevitt, who's the festival director of Sheffield's own annual horror festival, Celluloid Screams. Thank you for joining us and welcome to Weekly Geek Speak. This year, the festival starts on Friday the 23rd of October and it runs for the whole weekend. So, Rob, for our listeners that maybe aren't familiar with the festival, can you tell us about a typical Celluloid Screams weekend and what they would hope to expect?
This is the seventh year of Celluloid Screams, so we're kind of quite bedded in with how the weekend runs. It's pretty packed as weekends go. We don't really give people many breaks. It's feature films and short films from all over the world, some new, and some classic as well. And it's just a real broad range of horror cinema, a snapshot of horror cinema from this year, basically, and a few classics thrown in.
What made you want to come up with this festival and run it in the first place?
I first started going to horror festivals in about 2002, and I kind of always thought that, that Sheffield would benefit from having one, and I always thought that there was a real hunger from local fans that would be into it, and thankfully I've been proven right, and it's gotten bigger and bigger every year. So it's kind of come from there, and also because I'm a filmmaker as well, I'm going to festivals with my own films. It kind of, I was always kind of taking notes of how I would do it if I was to put on a festival, and then it kind of went from there.
Because you've been running it for quite a few years now, like you say, it's the seventh year. How has it developed over the years? Has there been anything that maybe has changed over the years? Have there been any lessons that you've learned?
We've gone from, in the first year of the festival in 2009, it was kind of viewed almost by us as kind of a miracle that it all happened and that people came, really, because you never know how these things are going to go. And over the years it has developed, the crowds have got bigger and bigger, you know, we're in the biggest screen at the showroom now, and getting to be the capacity of that as well, which is great. There are a lot of things that you do learn as you go along, particularly about pacing of the program and how you schedule it and all those kinds of things. I mean, one year we closed with the secret film, because we have a secret film every year. One year we closed with it. It was a great film, but it absolutely wasn't the right way to close the festival, because the way we do the secret film is we don't necessarily confirm the film until after the schedule is set. So effectively, looking back on it, it's ludicrous to think, oh, we're going to close a festival with a film we don't know what it is. So the actual tone of that film, leaving the audience at the end of the weekend on a high, is a really good one, which is why, like, last year we closed the festival with Dead Snow 2. Little things like that, you know, you learn, and people are very forgiving of stuff like that, you know, even though we completely pummeled the audience into submission by the end of that screening where they turned up not knowing what they were going to see, and they ended up seeing a two-hour true crime film that was just horrible and depressing.
What was the film, Rob?
Well, the film was Snowtown. It had a local connection, which was really good for us as well, because it was the first Warp Films Australia production. And as I say, great film, but my God, is it punishing.
If you had to look through your schedule this year of what you've got going on, and you had to recommend three top feature films for this year, which ones would spring to mind?
Oh, it's always really hard to pick highlights. One of the highlights for me has got to be the opening film, which is Karen Kusama's The Invitation, which is just unbelievable, like, superbly written, brilliantly acted, arguably more on the thriller side, but it's still, you know, it's still dark and violent and quite disturbing at the same time, so it's a perfect fit, and it's probably her best film as well to date, I would say. Also on opening night we have Goodnight Mommy, which is kind of the horror sensation, one of the horror sensations of the year. People went crazy for the trailer when it came out, and that is a piece of work. It's going to really do a number on people, I think. Yeah. Because it is, especially if people have got kids as well, because I have a child, and somehow that it does change the way you view things. I mean, obviously, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm suddenly programming a festival full of, I don't know, like Toy Story all weekend. You know, if anything, it's made it go, right, these are the things that I now find really disturbing. Let's get loads of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Goodnight Mommy is fantastic. It's one of our favourites. And it's the UK premiere as well. It's probably the hardest title it was for us to get this year. So wow. It was a really good one. Other than that, Deathgasm.
Okay.
If only I can say the word Deathgasm. It's fantastic. It's basically someone who's taken their love of heavy metal and horror and combined it into one extremely gory, ridiculous, puerile, over-the-top mania of a film. It's a director, Jason Lee Howden, and it continues a really strong thread of films from New Zealand and Australia. There's other ones that across the programme this year, because last year we had Housebound and What We Do in the Shadows, which won the Audience Award. I couldn't tell you what will win this year, the Audience Award. You always normally you kind of have an idea, but it could go either way with so many of them.
So this year, I know that you've got something a bit different going on and that you've got a special screening right at the very end of the festival. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, it's kind of our centrepiece event, really. Last year, I was fortunate enough to see Claudio Simonetti's Goblin performing a live rescore of Suspiria. So after seeing that, I was like, we have to get them. We've got to somehow, we have to make it happen and get them. And we have. So we have Claudio Simonetti, if people aren't familiar with him, was one of the founder members and lead composer in the band Goblin, who are an Italian kind of prog rock band originally. And they ended up doing the music for loads of Dario Argento films and a few other directors as well. So we have Claudio Simonetti's Goblin, which is the latest kind of incarnation of the band. It's him and some of the non-original members, but they're absolutely fantastic. And what they're going to do is do a live rescore of Argento's Profondo Rosso, also known as Deep Red. It's the 40th anniversary, so it was like, we have to do that one, of course. And then they're going to rescore the movie live, and then they're going to do a set after the film as well. So
wow.
It's going to be amazing, and it's our kind of headline event really to close the festival, and a real great high to end the festival on as well.
Mm-hmm.
So no true life death, just all fun live music this time.
Have you got any other special events happening this year?
We have, yeah. I mean, we always have an exhibition, I should mention that, an art exhibition that is co-curated between ourselves and Mute, who's a local artist who is one of the most absurdly talented people I've ever come across, and he's a really good friend as well, which is also a help. So we have a range of artists from across locally. We've got a couple of fairly big names this year that we're talking to that are putting pieces forward to be part of the exhibition, and as well as that, we've also got a first for us, which is arguably the first 360 degree virtual reality horror film, which is a short that we'll be having that people can go and watch on Oculus Rift headsets. It's absolutely terrifying because you're basically in the middle of a horror film and everywhere you look is the film.
Oh my God.
So the whole film basically surrounds you. The technology of virtual reality and how that can be applied to horror film specifically, because there's a lot of stuff that goes on with VR around games. But the stuff that can be done with film absolutely fascinates me personally, and hopefully it's something that we might be able to create something new of our own around that sort of technology. But for this one, we have a film called 1157, and the filmmakers are flying in from Amsterdam as well, because it's the first time that the film's been installed. The terminology is even different of whether you can call it a screening, because it's people watching it personally.
And
every viewing is going to be different as well. That's what's another fascinating thing about it. So I'm looking forward to scaring the crap out of people with that as well.
I'm sure you will, me included.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be very scared if I even dare to go near it. From my experience of being at Celluloid Screams, most of which I did last year, I noticed that you have selected short films in between your feature films. So obviously, for all the feature films that you have on, there's quite a lot of short films being played as well. So when you're looking for these short films, what kind of thing do you go for? What makes the cut? And then is there anything this year that particularly stands out?
Well, we talked about how hard it is to kind of predict which of the features is going to win. The shorts is arguably even harder. It's probably our strongest lineup of shorts, and it's also the most that we've screened as well. We've screened 27 short films this year across the whole programme.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of festivals, what tends to happen is they'll screen shorts as a block, so you'll have like six, maybe eight short films back to back. But I've never really liked the idea of doing that. I've always liked the idea of a short that complements a feature or that kind of fits thematically, perhaps sometimes with a feature film. And also, I think maybe it comes from my own festival experiences as a filmmaker, but I like the idea that you give the best possible platform to a short film if you show it before a feature, because someone might not bother coming to see a block of shorts, but the chances are I'm going to go and see Goodnight Mommy because, you know, I want to see it. Oh, and there's that as well, you know, yeah. And it really maximises the audience and gives them the exposure that I think they deserve. We kind of treat it almost on a level pegging with the features, really, that, in terms of how well the shorts are treated. They're not an afterthought, you know.
Yeah.
So in terms of the ones that I think are, what do we look for? Probably that we treat it with the same care as we treat the features. So kind of good ideas and good stories, well told, well, you know, well photographed, well written, or just a good idea that works, and it's the same with any film, really. I find it hard to pick as hard as the features, really, but just to pick a few highlights out from the shorts program, we've got the world premiere of Andy Stewart's new film Remnant. The listeners will be no doubt familiar with Andy. I think
yes,
you interviewed him at HorrorCon.
Yeah.
A bit of a departure for Andy with this one. It's not the puss and the horribleness that his previous films have been, and like it's not that doesn't quite go. It's still arguably body horror, because I don't think he could get away with that. You know, because when we've been talking about it and we saw a kind of rough cut of the film, I'm like, yeah, it's great. Of course, we've got to have it. Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, I'm not sure it's horror enough. I was like, you couldn't not be horror if you tried. What are you talking about? So, yeah, there's that one. We have the UK premiere of Portal to Hell, which is the last on-screen performance by Rowdy Roddy Piper from They Live. Because he died before the film was finished, even. And he was due to... They were going to use the short as a kind of springboard to make the feature version of it with him as well. Presumably that may well still happen with someone recast, but again, fantastic. It's about, he basically plays a janitor in a sort of apartment block who finds that after going around at the beck and call of everybody fixing people's toasters and doing everything for everyone, his next task is to stop two old guys opening a portal to some Lovecraftian dimension in the basement of the apartment building. So it's great. It's really funny. And it's a great tribute to him as a, who didn't do a great deal of acting because he was kind of primarily a WWF, as was WWE superstar.
Yeah.
But obviously he has a lot of fans and he's, it's a great kind of tribute to his work. And the only other one that springs to mind, just because it's so utterly, utterly batshit, is The Chickening.
Right, okay.
I'm not going to say anything about it, really, other than you have to come and see it. It's screening with Yakuza Apocalypse on the Friday night. One of the weirdest things I've ever seen. And I see a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So, yeah, come see that. If you imagine... I can't say anything without spoiling it, and it's so much better if you watch it and just bathe in the weirdness of it. It's so strange, but it's effectively original footage. That's all. I won't say what from.
Okay.
That's digitally augmented by this video artist called Nick Denboer. It's just baffling in its weirdness, and will go down a storm as soon as you see stuff that you know that the audience is going to really dig. It's like, and that's a UK premiere as well, so
right, okay.
So really cool.
Obviously, this year we lost a horror legend, sadly, in Wes Craven. Mm. And looking at your schedule for your all-nighter series of films that you've got going all night, is it on the Friday or the Saturday night?
Saturday night.
On the Saturday night. You're playing Nightmare on Elm Street. Was this influenced, like as a tribute to the passing of Wes Craven, or were you always going to play it?
We were always going to play that one, actually, because the way that the all-nighters work, this is the third one we've done, and in the past 2 years we had additional support from the BFI, which was conditional on theming it in a certain way. So, like, the first one was BFI Gothic, and the second one was BFI Sci-Fi, so all I did was just whack horror on the end of it and go, right, okay, we're going to sci-fi, we're going to play Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Okay.
So... But with this one, we didn't have that support. So it was but we still definitely wanted to do it. So it was just, well, do we even need to theme it? How about awesome movies?
Yeah,
there's a theme.
Definitely.
Well, obviously we start with something like Nightmare on Elm Street, and then it goes from there with Phantasm, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, because we've done the first Texas Chainsaw a couple of times before, so I didn't want to just trot that one out again. Mm. And 2 is arguably just a foot. If there's a 5 o'clock in the morning movie, that is it.
Okay.
Which, if you haven't seen it, it's got Dennis Hopper in a double-handed chainsaw duel with Leatherface.
Wow.
Because Dennis Hopper's the lead in it. Clearly unaware of what he's doing in the mid to late 80s, kind of going, got to pay the bills somehow. What am I going to do? Do you want this? What about this one? But going back to your original question, we plan to screen Elm Street anyway, and then it just kind of fits that, you know, it works that we opened the all-nighter with a kind of tribute. At one point, when it happened, I was like, okay, do we change everything? Do we make it all Wes Craven?
Yeah.
But I kind of didn't want to do that because it's all about pacing at the end of the day, and I think doing one, and arguably one of the most iconic ones, you know. Is enough, I think. And it's nice to see there are quite a few festivals that I've seen that are doing Wes Craven kind of tributes.
Yeah.
I've seen festivals that are doing Scream and some that are doing Serpent of the Rainbow as well, which is quite a rare one to see. So it's good that people are kind of spreading it and as an acknowledgement of, yeah, this is a guy who's going to be lost. I've just seen that. Amazing! I can't be there, obviously, because it's in LA. But they've got a screening at a festival called Beyond Fest, where they're screening a tribute, and like Robert Englund's going to be there, his son's going to be there, like a massive kind of broad panel. I mean, you're in LA, so they're all there.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
helps. But I'd love to go to something like that. It was something I would have acknowledged anyway.
Yeah.
So it just fits nicely that we're already doing it. Mm. So.
And keeping in, sadly, with the theme of horror legends that have sadly passed this year, we also lost Christopher Lee.
Mm.
So, with these two in particular in mind, have you maybe come across at your festivals any current actors or directors that could be the next generation of future legends in horror?
It's a really hard question, that. I'm in two minds about that whole kind of legend status thing, because I think we put so much kind of, it's arguably so much pressure on like filmmakers to become that almost, that it's, you're almost stifling it. It's like asking a 6-month-old to juggle, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to let them hone that a little bit, but there are a lot of great filmmakers around, like Adam Wingard, Ty West, like Astron 6 are one of my ultimate favourites, as you guys probably know. I'm going to be interested to see what they do next, because I was actually, last night I was watching in a kind of almost self-congratulatory way, watching some of the Q&A footage from last year.
Right.
And it's quite sad, because they're saying, oh, we've all got jobs, we don't want to do those jobs.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, man, that sucks.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I want those guys to be making something else. But I don't. I mean, as far as I know, the editor still doesn't have UK distribution. That's a crime.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it's just come out in the States from Scream Factory. But I even thought, I wonder how much it's going to cost. I'll do it. I haven't got enough money to do that, unfortunately. Yeah. Maybe we could crowdfund it though. There's an idea.
Definitely.
We'll release it as the first Celluloid Screams. In fact, if Adam and Matt are listening, we'll do that if you'll accept a very low offer. There is a kind of an expectation where, and I think the internet doesn't help with it either, where you get an expectation of filmmakers whereby everything's either awesome or shit. It's almost like stuff has to be sold as the best thing ever or nothing.
Mm.
And it's really hard because it inevitably sets people up for disappointment as well, which is why, you know, films like The Babadook is fine. It's a good movie. Is it the scariest horror film of the last 25 years? I don't know. I haven't seen them all.
Yeah.
You know, or It Follows, you know, it's a good movie. It's flawed. Yeah. I personally think. I don't want to come across like Quentin Tarantino going, what I would do differently is. but I don't think, you know, it doesn't do films any favours to universally come out and go, this is the greatest thing. This is me who runs a festival who's going, these films are awesome, come see them. But I think in terms of kind of the genre's development, I think you have to, I guess, just think the good will out, I suppose, and the good stuff will stand the test of time. I mean, there's still movies that we've screened in the past few years where they either haven't come out or they've been sneaked out on DVD, and it's difficult. Like, one of my favourite films, the film that won our first audience award for Best Feature in 2009 was a film called Lake Mungo. Have you seen that?
No.
That's an awesome movie. It's found footage, but it does it really well. It's like a found documentary about a girl's disappearance, and then she starts like appearing in video footage and in like photographs and stuff.
Oh, wow.
It's ace, and it was the opening film, and it ended up winning the audience award.
Right.
So that's well worth checking out. And again, that is available on DVD. But yeah, I think as long as filmmakers just keep making good films, or at least trying to make good films, then we'll be okay. I don't think anybody sets out to make bad films by any stretch. Mm. But there are a lot of kind of talented folks about, and let's just hope that some of them aren't just immediate, when they have a successful film, they're not just tapped for the next remake, which is seemingly what tends to happen.
Yeah.
You know, like the guy, Alexandra Aja, who did Switchblade Romance.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic film. Just an amazing kind of... from that wave of French horror that came out in the mid-2000s. Mm. Admittedly, his path has gone towards Hollywood, and that's fine. But I just want him to make a movie as good as that again.
Yeah.
So... I'm not here to shit talk filmmakers. I think everybody's doing great stuff. Keep up the good work.
Keep making some films that I can show at my festival.
Yeah. Keep making films. Keep showing them to us is the message, I guess.
Yeah. Thank you again for joining us today. It's been very interesting and enlightening. And can you remind us again of where and when Celluloid Screams is being held and where people can go for more information?
Yep. It's at the Showroom Cinema. It runs from the 23rd to the 25th of October, which is about 4 weeks away, or thereabouts. Showroom Cinema. The full programme is now on sale. You can buy weekend passes, which cover you for everything, including the all-nighter and the Goblin event. You can also buy a pass that doesn't include the all-nighter, because some people do like sleep.
I like sleep.
That's good.
That's the choice I'm taking.
Yeah. And we also sell individual tickets for the all-nighter on its own, so the four films, and then we've also got individual tickets for everything else. So you can just dip in and out. I think what we sometimes assume is that everyone's going to come for everything, which isn't always to people's taste, and it isn't always kind of feasible. So I think it's good to point out that you can buy individual tickets if you fancy coming and see one or two films across the weekend. That's fine too. We'd love to see you there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you'll be seeing me and Andrew and Steve from Weekly Geek Speak, so we'll see you there. Thank you again very much.
Thank you very much, Rob, for joining us there. Celluloid Screams is going to be a fantastic weekend, and we will be covering it in all its glory. Now, it is the end section of the podcast.
Where we
tie up all the loose ends.
Yeah.
Until next week.
Comes to a close.
It's been a higgledy-piggledy week with us chopping and changing segments.
Where does the term higgledy-piggledy come from?
Higgledy-piggledy. Well, it's weird if you actually try and think about it and break it down. Where does the piggledy come? What's a piggledy? Is it like when you shake a pig?
What's a higgledy? Hang on.
Someone must have just woken up one day and just seen like utter pig chaos.
Mm.
And be like, oh, it's higgledy-piggledy. And then somehow that got passed on.
been a bit weird.
Higgledy piggledy for me is when they say there's four beer mats and one is askew.
Yeah.
Or two are askew. And you go, oh, that's all higgledy piggledy. I'll put them in the right order.
I like the word askew. It's a nice word.
I think
to say.
It's like, it's just random. Random unorganised.
Jumbled up, yeah.
Yeah.
Talking of jumbled, I always think about. Whenever that word comes up, I think of charity shops and boxes of toys from when I was a kid. And I always, still to this day, I glance, I won't go down and rummage, but I glance down to see if there's any He-Man and things, but there never is anymore.
No.
Gone are the days when awesome toys were in there. Now it's just Ben 10 shit.
Always Ben 10. Rubbish. Ben 10's always my go-to example for things I don't care about.
It's
Ben 10 seems to represent the generation that I went past and cannot enjoy.
Mm.
Yeah.
But why Ben 10? It seems geared to me, Ben 10.
The concept is interesting, but...
But it's just not me. It's not my gen, man. It's not my generation.
I'm about five generations behind you, so all the things I've missed, Jesus, I don't know where to start.
You've been playing an interesting game which we were talking about the other day, weren't we?
Yes,
Mario
we
Maker. How have you found Mario Maker?
Oh, it's super fun. Dan was giving me a tutorial of all the Mario making mechanics and stuff. Oh, it's so I played two levels he'd created, and he took some great sadistic enjoyment in seeing me fail and fall for all the little traps and trolls one can do when you design your own Mario level.
Yeah,
it's super fun. I think it almost makes me want to buy a Wii U just so I can play around and troll people.
Oh,
because
wow.
That's what we want.
Yeah.
That's what we want at the end. And one of my first thoughts, I don't know if you're going to take this as a compliment or not, Stephen.
Go on.
Because it means you're in my thoughts. But my first comment was, I want to design a level for Steve.
Okay.
Like, immediately. No one else.
I think if you did, you would genuinely... You're always trying to push my button and find that thing. I think you'd find it.
Would it be? Is it Mario? Mario Rage.
We need
is
to
that,
YouTube.
Is that
it.
Your weakness?
It might be.
Oh, it's almost like a dream game, isn't it? That you come up with as a kid. Mm. Like, oh, I want to make Mario Land, and it really does lend itself. It's surprising it's took this long for it to actually appear. But the thing is with the Wii U that it's a weird console that there isn't enough going for me at the moment other than Mario Kart and this. But slowly, I'm getting more and more tempted.
They have a lot of safe franchises, don't they? So if you got Smash Brothers and Mario Kart and Super Mario 3D World and all the rest, you'd get enough to justify one easily.
Yeah.
It's just the exploring different games. I never know what to do with the Nintendo after those safe, obvious franchises, if you know what I mean.
I think it's just annoyed a lot of people that they haven't had a Zelda yet.
Where is it?
They keep putting it back. They keep putting it back and putting it back.
Oh, Hyrule Warriors as well. You could watch it on our YouTube channel. That's a great Wii U game. In fact, why don't I own one? I've played enough that I like.
When I watched your Hyrule Warriors episodes on Bemusement Arcade, the thing seems to be a small slice of story and then just charging around for a while.
Which is perfect.
Is that it? Like, I've watched multiple episodes and I'm intrigued. I couldn't tell you what's happening.
Yeah.
But it just seems like endless forces and you just run around thrashing your sword around.
The way I'd describe it is, do you know in Helm's Deep in Lord of the Rings, when like Aragorn, Legolas and Gimli somehow are superhuman and can take on like 180 orcs single-handed?
Mm.
It's a bit like how it would feel to be them.
Yeah.
Constantly. You just run around like being one-man armies, taking on actual armies. And it's just chaos and fun. Button mashing.
On that point, actually, because it has been decommended, so I can't bring it when we next do recommend decommend. I did watch the third Hobbit film. I have to say, Scott was right.
Right.
I love hearing that.
It's just about a satisfactory ending, but only for a hair. You know, it's just... And the problem is, because I really like the first, say, 40 minutes of the film, you see Smaug, and Smaug has been the best thing of the whole Hobbit thing anyway. Smaug taking on Lake Town, which should have been tacked on to the end of that movie. It was pointless that it just finished. So Smaug comes in, does his business in Lake Town, we have that. And then you have a really interesting kind of political pulling back and forth between the dwarves who have now secured all the gold, the men from Lake Town who are desperate, their town's been destroyed, and like, come on, you said you'd give us a bit of money to help us get back. And then the elves waltz in, like, they are like, you, we are better than you all, this belongs to us. So you have this kind of political back and forth going on. And you know, I'm enjoying this, because that's interesting. You know, that's the Tolkien-y kind of stuff that I like. And obviously battles are a big part of it. But the problem is, as soon as the battle starts, it's almost too big.
Okay.
That you just don't care. And I don't know how he's managed that, because I love the battles in Lord of the Rings. And this is the first one we've had. In the rest of The Hobbit, there's no battles.
Right. So it's all built into this.
Trotting around. Right. But this, I mean, Helm's Deep is one of the greatest battles in cinema, if you ask me.
Right.
The one at the end of Return of the King is similarly great. But this one just seems ridiculous, and so many questions fire up, like, why on earth 60 years later in Lord of the Rings is this the time that Sauron's strong enough, because that's one massive orc army going off there. I'm like, well, what's that, are they just going to kip for 60 years or however long it's between? And then, you know, the big issue that everyone has with Return of the King and having too many endings. Yeah. I've kind of 12 hours deep into this story now. I kind of do want to see what happens to the characters. So I don't mind the 45 endings because I'm finding out about the characters. However, when Gandalf goes, come on, Bilbo, let's go home, and they just walk off home, they seem to find the route home with no problem, despite all the trouble they have getting in. Not that I need to see Bilbo. The eagles don't even take him home, though. But the eagles do come in and do their thing at the end, you know. Oh, it's the eagles again. But the problem with the film is, by the time halfway through the battle, I just didn't care.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then on reflection, I finished it and went, I don't care. And then I think, actually, I did care what happened to that whole political debate, because it's not referred to in Lord of the Rings. We don't know what happens to all that gold. I don't know. It's just a really odd film. It's almost like, all of a sudden, Peter Jackson stopped caring about his universe.
It was a bit, well, a lot was made, the decision to make three films out of the smallest book and all the rest. And I weren't that bothered. It was a talking point, because a lot of people called the first one bloated and the second one. But I enjoyed them. But this third one, it was like, yeah, I feel like literally the last 25 minutes of the film's been made into a film. But without the endings, you could have given it, because you didn't want to stray from the text too much.
Exactly.
So it was that.
I was going to say, it's really weird, because in one hand, it's probably more tonally like Lord of the Rings than the first two Hobbit films. But it just doesn't have the depth and richness of the universe. It's almost like a light version, but at the same time not, because the other ones, do you know what I mean? It's got the battles, the seriousness, the tone, but it's like a really thin scraping of butter on your bread.
It doesn't seem to be as epic or as it's not a criticism in it of itself, because you can have more intimate fights and different styles, but I feel like it was going for epic and somehow failed. It's just really weird. I imagine it'll play a lot better if you were marathoning them.
Yeah,
it plays almost like an entire third act as it is. But as a film on its own, it's really bearish. It's really weird watch.
And what's really sad about this is when we were talking about the awards last year, we left out Desolation of Smaug, because we said, well, next year The Hobbit's going to get the pomp because it's the big last one, and actually it's just been a bit of a damp squib, really.
I don't think he'll get a mention.
No, he won't. Even in a year of mainly sevens, it's not going to get a mention, which is a real shame. But one thing I will, just to finish it, is I'm glad it happened. I'm glad they made The Hobbit. I'm glad they made it now, and I'm glad that Peter Jackson did it, because I wouldn't want it revisited Star Wars-esque in 20 years' time, or 10, 15 years' time. And I wouldn't want. I don't think I would have liked it if Guillermo del Toro had actually done it. Because I think he is a greater director as he is. I think his style over substance. And even though you could argue that the last film was a bit more style over substance, at least Peter Jackson kept that Lord of the Rings heart. But that's my view on The Hobbit. Battle of 54 yeah, you know, armies.
Yeah. It doesn't hold up to The Lord of the Rings, but I still think those two first films are solid. Yeah. Are solid enough. I think it's fine. It's just a bit meh.
Yeah. What time is it, Steve?
Hey, it's time for This Week The Geeks Have Spoken.
Your Skype microphone made that sound much more bassy, and I liked it.
Yeah, it was good.
I'm not good, baby. Don't praise the mic.
It's your throat.
Yeah.
Scott's got a great throat.
Mm. I have. I've got a beautiful larynx.
Thank you kindly for all your interactions, tweets, three-word reviews, and retweets, etc. and whatnot. Back on track this week. We're going to start, as always, with the three-word reviews. And we're back. I haven't said this in a while, but king of three-word reviews, Pete Buschbauer.
Yay!
Although now Scott's lost.
Yeah, Scott, you've lost, I'm afraid. But he's watched a film called The Overnight and said, hilarious downward spiral, 8 out of 10. And that's film 324 in his quest to watch 356
in
a year.
You can do
he's
it.
He's on it, believe him.
It's good to hear from him, though. Although no news was good news, because I assume that meant his comedy was going well.
Yeah, definitely. And you can check out Popular Outcasts on YouTube and all the comedy work they do there. Hollowspy at Hollowspy saw Sicario and said, unconventional approach. Different, 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I've heard some interesting things about this one. I kind of fancy it.
Superfan Robbie Polanco saw Big Trouble in Little China and just said, David Lopan, 8 out of 10.
I have to say, because I was ashamed to say I've never watched it until our screening, I thought it was absolutely bonkers. I loved every minute of it.
It's a great film, isn't it?
It's my favourite thing I've watched during our screenings. And we've had some pearlers.
Fifth Wall Podcast at Fifth Wall Pod. I just wanted to say happy 50th episode.
Fantastic podcast. Do give them a listen. They analyse a film each episode.
Yeah.
They're going into their horror month next month.
Before
and they did a really good job with it last year.
Mm.
That's where I really jumped on board last year with them, with the horror ones. They're a fantastic show.
They are. And they
really are.
The 50th episode, they talked about Evolution, which I haven't seen, but they've made me really want to watch. And apparently David
Duchovny.
Yeah. And apparently he turned...
Julianne Moore.
Yeah. And it made it sound really cool, and I really want to watch it now. But apparently he turned down a role in Star Wars Episode 2 to take on Evolution instead. And I tweeted them about it, and they said, yeah, apparently some people have said that he was going to be Bail Organa or maybe Jango Fett or an undisclosed role. Mm. There were rumours, but it was never quite... But he definitely turned down the role.
It'd been interesting. I'd have just spent all my time going, is that David Duchovny?
Yeah, exactly. It would have been weird.
Evolution was all right. I remember watching it at the cinema... around that time, I remember it being quite fun.
I had it on VHS. It was a very slapsticky, fun Men in Black esque kind of caper, wasn't it?
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah,
it sounded like it. Yeah, Dave Kerr at Dave Kerr Music said, "Passenger 57 for your movie night. That would be badass." # Wesley Snipes.
There was a spate of transport action movies after Speed, wasn't there? And this was one of them. I've never seen it.
I've not.
And I'm always up for a bit of Snips, so...
It is Wesley Snipes. Thanks for correcting.
Yeah.
Everyone knows it's Wesley Snipes. And thanks, instead of Tom Hanks.
It is.
I wish people would get it right, because they're embarrassing themselves.
Also featuring The Rock, because he'd have to be.
Yeah, he's in everything.
Someone the other day called him Rock the Dwayne Johnson, and I don't know why that tickled me.
Rock the Dwayne Johnson.
So can we call him the Dwayne?
The Dwayne.
Yeah. I wanted to sing the Rock the Dwayne Johnson on the dirty treetop. I don't know.
On the dirty, dirty treetop.
I don't know how the words go.
I don't even know what that song is. What is it?
Rockabye Baby, but I was trying to sing Rock the Dwayne Johnson on the treetop. I don't know.
Okay.
Steve's gone mad.
It has.
Did you say it has?
Yeah, that's it. I don't know where I've been for the past 4 years.
I just wanted to thank James for the American Werewolf in London picture for our Halloween screening. It was amazing.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
Paze at Paisy Bones.
Paisy.
Peasy.
Mm-hmm. Paisy. Mm-hmm.
Poo.
Yep.
Paisy, Paisy, Pee.
Hmm.
Paisy, Poo. I don't know where I was going with that.
Nice. Paisy Bones, Thomas Austin Morgan at Hey It's Me Tom, and Lucy at Jareth Jones all sent the Good Burger clip. And Hey It's Me Tom said, you're bringing it back with all your mentions.
We must have. There's no other explanation why we would go on about Good Burger. I think Jimmy Kimmel / Fallon, whichever one he is, is a listener.
Yeah, I think he must be a listener.
I think it's weird though, because I think everyone knows Keenan and Kel and grew up with Keenan and Kel with a love for them. But I feel like good. Yeah. But you had Abbott and Costello, didn't you?
Yeah.
You had Lovell and Hardy. But I feel like Good Burger no one talks about. So weirdly, after us mentioning it and it being everywhere, it's a bit weird.
Yeah.
I don't think for a second we did anything about it, but it's funny to get loads of people mentioning it.
Yeah, I like it. Superfan Robbie Polanco at Robbie_Polanco. Haven't seen Monster Squad in many years. Sounds like a great film to watch in October.
It certainly is.
And he said, Insidious was terrible. Sinister was better.
I'd go the other way around, personally, but much ado.
I can't remember.
I liked them both, but I think Sinister's creepier, and I think Insidious is more weirdly enjoyable. I don't know how to explain. There's a tongue in the cheek, Insidious, whereas Sinister's slightly more po-faced.
Mm. Also said a new hashtag I'm starting instead of Stave Scott. Bros before Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
but that implies there's going to be many occasions Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 gets in the way of us.
Wow, you've seen it once without me.
I feel like it was just the one time.
You've really rubbed sand in his vagina with this one.
I know. But I'll make it up to you with Pixels. We made a pact.
Well,
Pixels pact.
I'll believe it when I watch it. I did the return of Fridge quote. He was licking me, was the quote.
Steve was having a fun night.
Yeah, I was. JTW at iFufkin said it was WGS sexy times and it was said by a tumescent Andrew.
What's the line?
He was licking me.
He was licking me.
Oh.
Ooh. Oh. I felt movement.
Yeah, I know.
The periscope.
It's a twinge.
It definitely twitched. It twitched as it happened.
And Hard Luck Hotel on Instagram said it was Jeremy Davis in Ravenous, and that's the correct answer. It was Jeremy Davis in Ravenous, the film about cannibals from 1997. I'll be bringing more on that next week.
Mm. More fridge quotes.
Mm. Yeah, more fridge quotes.
They are cool.
We had a fan pick on @FlickeringMyth, the website, of Tom Hardy as Wolverine. Somebody had done it, and it looked fucking incredible.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it looked brilliant. Dave at Wilbro Jr. 36 says the pic's awesome, and he's good at what he does, and he ain't nice. So we had a little chat, and I think he might be, I don't know, if he played a miserable shit in a yellow suit.
He could be, I'd
cast Tom Hardy as most things people would ever suggest, to be honest. He'd be a good Bond, a good Batman, a good anything you could ever. Yeah, of course he'd be a good Wolverine. I'd rather have someone really stocky, though.
You need to be tiny. I like the idea of a tiny person.
Yeah,
but big.
Yeah, small but big, and like with his acting, show you that he's more than his size, obviously. But yeah, no, Hugh Jackman bucked the trend of being tall. I forgive it, but like, you've got a chance to differentiate by being more to the comics by making him a little wee man.
Yeah.
Little wee Wolverine. I'd watch an X-Men film where Tom Hardy plays every role, including Rogue, Storm and Shadowcat. I'd be quite happy.
Hell yeah, happy. I'd be up for that. The Rock would be in there somewhere, just because he'd have to be. But yeah.
Obviously. That's all right.
Exactly. we put up the video of the Star Wars changes, side by side, of all the changes they've made from the original cut of Star Wars. And there was some fun. It was brilliant. It's strange to see, actually, side by side.
Interestingly, because I always defend it, the 97 ones. And I still don't mind things being added to a degree. However, when you see the CGI Jubats from 1997, and then you see that stop-motion single one from 1977, it looks better in the distance as a small thing that you can't see quite properly than a dated CGI thing. My other issue is, I don't mind some of the things added on going on in Tatooine in the background, but the problem is they're all doing wacky shit, and this was the wacky shit that he brought in the prequels. I know there is an element of wacky gobble gibble in Star Wars anyway, but you can't just have a large creature walking past. It's got to have a Jawa swinging off it, going.
Yep.
Or a droid punching another droid.
Yep.
Why? I don't mind him tinkering, but why draw more attention to it?
Yeah, that's it.
It's his film, so they'll do what he wants.
Exactly. And I just, it was that's the first time I've ever seen them back to back, and it is. I still like the originals, and I stand by my point. I
want to start a sort of crowdfunding venture where we get Kevin Smith to remake Clerks. But he colours it and he sticks random CGI things in the background.
I will say as well, my other point on it was I am glad the Jabba scene was put back in. And the reason I like the Jabba scene is because it was always intended to be in it. But the reason is he didn't, is they didn't have a budget or something like that, wasn't it?
Definitely, yeah.
I don't mind that
scene. And I think it's cool. Mm. It sets him up for Jedi as well.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
And a random slug just doesn't appear in the third ring of
what?
Yeah, going, what's that about?
But Nerd Church at Nerd_Church podcast. They are a great podcast. Check them out, part of the Pod Pals. But they said, I think the changes made them worse, of course. But adjusting clarity and contrast is one thing. Yeah. Adding a bunch of shitty CGI because you can. Blur. And then Eric Ford at RebelScum421 said, Greedo and Jabba scene makes no sense. Never had a problem with the rest of it as it fleshes Tatooine out.
The Greedo scene, they don't need to do that. That's pointless, we know that.
Yeah.
The Jabba scene, I think there is. It can live without it, but I don't think it does any harm. And I do agree that the touch-up and colour is the right way to go. I think that improves it.
It did look nice.
Well, I don't mind someone augmenting a film, but it's when you when you change it in a way where its meaning can be changed, I have a massive problem. So yeah, adding a no when Darth Vader chucks it.
Oh God, that was
might not seem like a big deal, but it changes how you watch that scene and interpret his action.
It really does,
and I don't like that.
No,
because before you can reject your own. Why does he have to say no?
Yeah. It just it didn't work.
The fact that when he just chucks him off as well, it's very Darth Vader. It's I've calculated this. I know what I'm going to do, and I've made my decision. It's not no desperation. Whee!
Yeah,
you know.
Well, it survived 30 years of not needing that, and we all understood exactly what happened, and we're quite happy with that.
Definitely.
2011 Blu-ray one. They did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. What's... So, I don't know. Just I don't like it.
No, it's weird. But then Nerd Church went on to say every podcast has a Steve and every podcast has a Lucas apologist. It would seem. Mm. And Eric Ford.
Who's
said,
that Lucas apologist?
Don't know.
It's not me.
Not me.
I'm not. It might be me, but I'm not defending him. I'm just saying that. There are little things in it. I don't think it's complete travesty that it was touched up. It did bring it to a generation.
Yeah.
But actually watching that side by side, you did see everything he did wrong as well.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a geeky debate that'll rage on for years.
Okay, well.
Just give us all the versions of it readily available and it won't be an issue ever again.
Yeah, exactly. Give the people what they want, which I think they are. So. Yeah. It's good
because we as a consensus can pick our version.
Mm. Yeah,
the true version will rise.
Definitely, yeah. And Eric Ford, RebelScum421 said, "If we're talking A New Hope, yeah. If this was about Return of the Jedi, I would reply completely differently. Jabba's palace was raped hard in that."
What interesting? I've got a question. If you had kids, which version would you show them?
The original ones. They're uncut.
But what if they have no patience?
I get that. I get this because you're applying your sensibilities onto it then. Whereas I really want to introduce the children to the Star Wars universe, and I was introduced on the 97. They might look at those ones from the 70s and go, this is old rubbish, because that's what kids will see. Now, if you give them an updated Blu-ray version in perfect clarity with wacky droids punching each other in the background, it's going to entertain them, and yes, they're in on Star Wars, not dad's boring old film. If you think about when your dad tried to make you listen to music, and you're like, this is shit.
you know.
And maybe you can be like, oh, you really like that film. Well, here's how it's supposed to be.
Because I think
I can see that.
You've got to, with children especially, if you want to introduce your kids to something you love, you've got to find a way through the door. And I don't think putting something boring on is
okay, wacky hijinks for the way forward.
Something more like kiddish, and that's what basically the 97 one, I guess, kind of did.
Because my little brother and sister, they love Star Wars, but they don't really see much of a difference between the prequels and the original trilogy, because they've known them all. One was alive as Phantom Menace was coming out, but they've kind of known them all as a whole anyway.
Yeah,
they don't see that it was this perfect trilogy that came back. They just go, oh, these are a bunch of films that are all linked.
Yeah,
they don't get annoyed at Metaclorians because that's what they told up front first.
Yeah, you know what I mean, yeah, exactly. They've got it.
Shudders. But yeah, what a surprise!
Yeah.
We get on Star Wars and we've
talked
for 20 minutes.
Muthridge Caniv at M3JCNV said, "I think Game of Thrones is spoiler happy because people feel the need to race each other on who's the most upset by recent episodes."
Yeah, it's become a thing. Why? Isn't it?
Yeah.
But why is it to prove that they like it the most? Because I hate people like that.
I think it is.
Where it's like, oh, well, you were that devastated. I was this devastated. It's like, you watch it, that's fine. You're a fan.
I always remember there was a kid at my school. He said, I'm the biggest fan of horror in the world. No sense of irony at all. Oh, no, I'm the biggest horror fan in the world because I watched Halloween once. I said, have you seen this, and this? And he went, don't you dare make out you're a bigger fan than me or I'll punch you.
Wow.
And I always think that's really funny. That's what I hear when I hear the people like saying, I'm a bigger fan, I'll punch you if you don't agree with me.
I was once introduced to someone going, oh, you'll like him, he's the biggest Batman fan possibly on the planet. And I'm like, all right. And then it was around the time Grant Morrison had quote-unquote killed Batman. I went, oh, what do you think to that? And he went, you what? Anyway, what do you think to Grant Morrison kill Batman? And he went, Batman Zed.
Wow.
Basically, he like watched The Dark Knight a few times. But that's not to have a go, because you can be as into something as you want. But but why do people, they can't just enjoy something, they have to enjoy it the most, don't they? I don't get it.
It's true, it's that one-upmanship.
Because if I like something, I want everyone to enjoy it the way I enjoyed it, which is pure and unspoiled.
Definitely.
So why would you spoil?
No, I know.
If you really love Game of Thrones, create an environment someone can discover it and love it as much as you can.
And if you really love something, surely one of the greatest things about a love for something is the fact you want to discuss with people the merits and the greatness and things. But a lot of these people seem to be like, well, why are you talking to me about that? I know more than you. And it's like, so you want to hamper conversation just because you think you're better. It's a bizarre attitude that people have.
It's a bit like, oh, it's mine. It's part of me. And it's like, it's not yours. You had nothing to do with it.
It's a comic. Like it's an old-fashioned trope of the comic book geek, though, isn't it? And fortunately, I think we live in a world now where we have evolved.
Yeah, definitely.
But I don't know, Game of Thrones stokes those old sort of sensibilities that I don't like. Just live and let live. Let everyone enjoy what they want to enjoy in the way they want to enjoy it. And don't spoil anything.
No, definitely. Simple. That's it. That's all we want. He also said, I love Back to the Future, but I'm constantly trying to figure out how Doc Brown and Marty ended up meeting in the first place.
Yeah. It's the greatest mystery of Back to the Future. And it can only be because he is his true dad.
I like that idea.
Or he's a paedophile.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's the other one. We know how dark that film is. We've established it. Over the past few weeks, we've established that this film is dark. I wouldn't put it past it.
Or somehow he's him from an alternate timeline.
Doc Brown has been attracted to Marty for years, but he never acted on it. And his own guilt led him to try and commit suicide, which he tries to do at the beginning of the Back to the Future, because he admits himself none of his inventions ever work, and he aims that DeLorean straight at him. He went to know it was going to miss. He wanted to die, but inadvertently created time travel.
And won the heart of Marty McFly in his mind.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's a love triangle because Marty loves his mum.
He does. Whoa, it's the weirdest love triangle.
Oh dear, what's happening?
Oh god.
Next.
Next! just give a mention to Muthridge's podcast at whatis173. You can follow him on Twitter.
And I feel really bad about this.
Well, we always say, we always put the suffix onto the pod pals that we will forget one, and we did. I think we normally hit them all, but we forgot one, yeah. And we are so sorry. The pod pals, though, hashtag pod pals, check them out. We're going to miss one, I'm sure, as I try and run them off by memory. I should write them down. But at HOM Podcast,
yep.
At ABH
yep.
Pod, at nerd_church, yep. We've mentioned already, Stinking Paws, Drunk Geek Blog, and What is 173, Attaboy C, and History Movie Histories.
At Weekly Geek Speak.
Oh, yeah, that one.
That one. That's
always
terrible.
That.
That
yeah, don't.
They just
yeah.
waffle on last, for 40 God. Minutes each.
Last and least.
Flipping out. We've got a couple more. We've just Paze at Paisy Bones said fan theory. In the new Bumpy Goose, the fellas met God, as every nun is married to God.
Wow. Oh shit.
There you are.
Shit got real.
You giggle away at my stories, yes. But the nuns
were dead all along.
The nuns yeah. were dead oh, all God. Along. And they were all being controlled by squirrels. Oh, wow. Probably would be a Bumpy Goose story.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear.
Hey,
I would actually love to hear some fan theories about Bumpy Goose.
Yeah,
like where did the yellow umber come from?
Oh,
that will always be a mystery. It's like Slender
what
Man.
Is with it? What is this hose pipe about? Why is all these weird things happening in this place?
It's like Lost,
it is. Purgatory. We'll never know what.
It's always purgatory.
It is. That's it. damn it. And lastly, Michael Saborin at The Flickist said the lost button apocalypse hashtag will all die with our pants down, and that was our WGS apocalypse.
Oh,
everyone's trousers drop yeah. at the same moment, and like planes are dropping out the air because the pilot's going trying to pick his trousers up.
Yeah.
People getting run over, you know, people are driving and they're going chaotic because their pants will come
after,
down
yeah.
after that chaotic 5 or 10 minutes where millions would die. Wouldn't it be like a weird paradise as we all just realise, like, it doesn't matter?
As we all just have our penises out. Just walk around the lady junk and everyone's looking around going, oh,
so
this is
so
what
instead
we...
Of, instead of we all hold hands and walk into this new world together, we all just grab each other's crotches and walk into this new
okay.
world.
This sounds like a Back to the Future story, though.
It does. Oh, good God. When this wrist reaches 88 miles per hour... You're going to see some
Everyone
serious shit.
Everybody, static electricity.
Oh, God, where we're going, we don't need pants. He also said, come on, guys, pig-based movies, and neither of you said, you don't say Charlotte's mother-loving web. Hashtag shame.
It's a pig movie.
That's a good point.
It is.
Never thought.
It's a very good
never
point.
Never thought about Charlotte's web.
I've not seen the film. The book is great.
I didn't say Deliverance, either.
No.
And on that note, we have been Weekly Geek Speak. You can follow us at Weekly Geek Speak on Twitter, on Facebook, facebook.com/Weekly Geek Speak. And also do rate, subscribe, and review on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, and Podcastland. Check out YouTube as well. Big thanks to Rob Nevitt. Please do keep your eyes on at Chef Horror Fest for more announcements. We will be there. We will be putting Steve in an Oculus Rift experience.
Oh, God,
a
what?
A horror one, and we will be filming it so you can all see. That's been decided.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And, wow. Yeah, we will be back next week with more geeky stuff. And, yeah, anything else?
Don't forget to check Instagram for Bumpy Goose artwork and behind-the-scenes random photos of screenings and stuff, and keep an eye on our Facebook for details of the screenings as they come.
And we're hoping to do something exciting and interactive in the next outro. More news on that soon. Even Scott doesn't know, because we're going to keep it a secret from him.
Why?
That's
why?
Weekly Geek Speak. Bye!
Wait, why?